Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. I missed 2 weeks of videotaping. The week over Christmas, I was out of town, and last week I came down with a virus. I was still able to do my audio radio programs. The January 1st program was my 2022 prophecy program. And last week was my Build Back Bankrupt Part 2 program. You can listen to those at godandcountryradio.org. I still have some lingering effects of the virus, so my voice may sound a little strange today. Was it the Omicron virus? I don't think so. It felt like the typical virus, so I didn't bother getting tested. You know, besides, who wants to wait in line with a bunch of other sick people to get tested? That doesn't sound too wise. And I'm not that curious. And everyone actually questions the accuracy of these tests. I know quite a few couples who live in the same house have the same symptoms, and one person tests positive and the other negative. Well, if enduring the Omicron virus makes me a hero, then I'll just say I had Omicron, but I speak as a fool. Well, this month in Washington is the Right to Life March, to protest the Supreme Court ruling of Roe versus Wade back in January 22nd, 1973. So on today's program, I'd like to again address the abortion issue. We should never forget this ongoing American Holocaust. Really, it's a worldwide Holocaust. But soon, Isaiah chapter 26, verse 21, the Lord is about to come from his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. And the earth will reveal her bloodshed and will no longer cover her slain. The March for Life is taking place in Washington on Friday, January 21st. The New Jersey Right to Life is doing a march in Trenton tomorrow, Friday, January 14th. Each state has, its own rally. On Monday of this week, 200 Christian activists made their opposition known to abortion in front of the state house. The state has been trying to pass a bill called the Reproductive Freedom Act. New Jersey already has the most liberal abortion laws in the nation, but this bill would further enshrine abortion in New Jersey state law and make your tax dollars pay for all abortions by making abortion a right. The bill was put together by Planned Parenthood to ensure a perpetual flow of money for Planned Parenthood, as they say, follow the money. Well, this bill, the Reproduction Freedom Act, had not been able to pass, so the Democrats created a simpler, streamlined version of the bill and were able to pass it in Monday's lame duck session, before the Republicans took the additional seats they won back in November. Expanded abortion has been a pet project for Governor Murphy and his wife, and the goal of some senators who will not be coming back, so they wanted to leave with this effort. They want this to be their legacy because they love their abortion. They hate the moral obligation and responsibility that comes with sexual freedom. Even though this bill passed, it didn't pass without a voice of opposition, so I thank God for the Christians who showed up in Trenton to protest the bill. So I hope you make it to one of these rallies in Trenton on the 14th or in Washington on the 21st. I've committed myself to showing up at the Trenton rally every year and the Washington rally as often as I possibly can, which comes down to probably about once in every 4 years. I figure that if 25% of those who oppose abortion show up in Washington, that would be about 25 million to 50 million people. That many citizens converge on Washington would certainly shake up the politicians. Like it or not, in our system, judges and elected officials rarely decide the law based on the higher law of God. They put their finger to the wind and they base law on the most vocal segment of society. Now, we may despise that system, determining right or wrong by public opinion, but that's the way it is, and so we need to let our voices be made known. The crowd gathered outside of Pilate's judgment hall and persuaded Pilate to crucify Jesus. I want to be the guy in the crowd who shows up and cries out, "Release Jesus." Now, of course, Pilate should do the right thing, regardless of the opinion of the crowd. And I hate playing into his wrong basis for right and wrong. But if the state is going to make its ruling based upon my voice, I'm going to have to make my voice heard. I'm also tempted to just stay home. The rally is not going to miss me if I don't show up. But what if everyone did that? And Christians who live in Texas, Wyoming, California might have a good excuse for not showing up, but I only live 3 hours from Washington. Let me get this also off my chest. I have a problem with these pro-life organizations deciding to hold their rally in January, as if there's something sacrosanct about the day that the Roe versus Wade ruling was announced. Nobody cares or remembers the date. It's the issue that matters. And January is the worst month, weather-wise. It really discourages people from coming. The rally should be held in October. Better weather, better attendance, and it will have a better influence on the November elections. And the rally should be held on the weekend, on Saturday, not during the work week. Because as it is, only at-home moms, retirees, and self-employed pro-lifers show up to the rally. The logic of having it during the week is so that the politicians can see the crowd. Congress doesn't meet on Saturday. But if millions showed up on the weekend, the politicians would get word of it. The goal should be turnout. But nevertheless, since I'm not the one planning these rallies, I'll support the status quo because better that something gets done than nothing. So let me again discuss this whole issue of abortion, what's happening. First, a prophetic overview. Let's not miss the forest for the individual trees. Back in 1946, at the Nuremberg trials, Western nations declared that abortion was a crime against humanity. 27 years later, after the sexual revolution, there was a seismic shift in Western thought, and abortion was legalized in 1973. So how could that happen? How could the World War II generation consider abortion an evil, and the next generation consider it a human right? Well, it has to do with the worldwide apostasy and the rejection of God's law in the 20th century. Theism was replaced with humanism. Law moved off the foundation of God and onto the foundation of man. The basis for right and wrong was no longer considered truth derived from the Creator God, but something that man must determine on his own based upon utilitarian considerations, what's best for mankind. And the wedge to bring in this change was the reasoning that in a democratic society, anything religious, any reference to God, should not be permitted because that would be unfair toward non-Christians. The God hypothesis was considered unscientific, unprovable. Therefore, we must resort to human utility to decide right and wrong. Besides, it was claimed we can decide law without reference to God. And even many Christians fell for that lie that truth was self-evident. And to quote one of my favorite statements from the early American theologian Jonathan Edwards, from his treatise called The Insufficiency of Reason as a Substitute for God's Revelation, the Bible, Edwards wrote, "If a nation renounces the necessity of divine revelation in her laws, that nation will soon become more absurd, brutish, and monstrous in its notions and practices than the heathen were before the gospel came among them." such as happened in ancient Israel in her abandonment of God. The Jews committed more evil than the Canaanites who were before them. 2 Kings chapter 21, verse 9. But they did not listen, and King Manasseh seduced them to do evil more than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the sons of Israel. Particularly under Manasseh, the shedding of innocent blood and the sacrifice of their children on the altar of Baal, the ancient form of abortion. As soon as God and his word is no longer believed as the basis for law and replaced with man's own desires and utility, in comes abortion, homosexual marriage, legalized drugs, pornography, prostitution, legalized gambling, transgenderism, socialism, etc. It's inevitable. Even the murder of innocent children becomes acceptable. If you operate on the moral basis of Sodom, you eventually become Sodom. And for all the efforts to outlaw abortion by the pro-life movement, it's not working because abortion will not be overturned until the foundations for morals in our country return to God. But that's not happening. There are no moral or political movements in America to return America or any Western nation back to the Christian state model. So what we mostly have today are attempts by religious people to overturn immoral laws on the same utilitarian basis that the seculars operate on. With the foundation of God absent, all people can argue over is whether pro-life or pro-choice is best for mankind. Or if pro-life or pro-choice is right or wrong based upon man's document, Constitution. The courts, the state, will not even consider any religious basis for law. It's even to the point that if there is a religious basis for a law, that guarantees that it shouldn't exist. And with that mindset prevailing in our culture, righteous laws will not pass, and those that exist will gradually be removed, one by one. In the current anti-religious legal framework, even if 60% of the public is against abortion, the pro-choice crowd will claim minority rights. Because in modern thought, what matters is not the law, but who gets to decide the law. And it's man, not God. Because we must operate as if God doesn't exist in order to be fair, and that's the lie that has ushered in the age of secularism. Now, theologically, abortion is proof that mankind is totally depraved. Romans chapter 3, the evidence that there is none righteous is that their feet are swift to shed blood. Often people defend their righteousness by saying, well, at least I haven't murdered anyone. Well, more than 50% of the population in America can't say that any longer. News story this week, a mother in Mexico threw her baby into a dumpster. Here's that story.
And we begin with a horrific story out of Hobbs, New Mexico, a mother throwing her newborn into a dumpster. That baby found alive, and tonight there is video. Action 7 News reporter John Carnelli breaks down those details.
Yeah, Kaylin, this story is definitely hard to watch, so we want to give you a warning at home. What you're about to see is security footage from the business where the incident occurred. It shows the baby being thrown in the trash, then being recovered nearly 5.5 hours later.
This security video we received from Embry Alley lays out what happened on January 7th. You can see on the security video, it's 2 p.m. when a white car pulls up to the dumpster. A woman exits the driver's side of the car, opens the back passenger door, grabs a black bag, and throws it into the dumpster. She then proceeds to leave.
The girl just drives up like it's a piece of trash, reaches in the back of her car, dumps it, and just drives off. No remorse.
Fast forward to 7:42 p.m. A group of people appear to be looking through the dumpster when they come across a black bag. You can see a woman pull out a baby and begin walking with it. Minutes later, police arrive at the scene.
Also, notice this story. There's a forum on Reddit called the Child Free Community. It's a group of people that scorn having children. One woman posted this. I'm on my way to Planned Parenthood to purge the two parasites that somehow implanted into my uterus despite being on the pill. I can't effing wait to stop being nauseous and throwing up. I can't wait to be rid of this hyperemesis gravidarium that's destroyed my Christmas and ruined my New Year's and is ruining my life. I can't effing wait to be done with the anxiety of knowing these things are in my uterus and knowing that I will not have to birth dribbling horror goblins, will not have disgusting leaking breasts, will not go home from the hospital with a nappy and with a stitched up vagina, will not have postpartum depression or be left disfigured with stretch marks. My relationship with my significant other will not be ruined. I'm dedicating this double fetus purge to the anti-choice movement because no matter how hard you try, you will not force us to be your handmaidens. What's going on here is a hard heart, the absence of love. And this is the condition of fallen mankind. The unsaved have the same nature as Satan. 1 John chapter 3, verse 8, the one who practices sin is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. The Son of God appeared for this purpose, to destroy the works of the devil. No one who is born of God practices sin because his seed abides in him, and he cannot sin because he is born of God. By this, the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. Anyone who does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor the one who does not love his brother. You know, I used to think that women were made of sugar and spice and everything nice. But unregenerate women have the Jezebel spirit. Romans chapter 1, verse 26, they too have degraded passions and unnatural affections. In my Sunday message, I was speaking on Matthew 19:8, where Jesus said that because of the hardness of your hearts, Moses permitted the bill of divorce. Hard-heartedness is the reason for marital conflict. And hard-heartedness is not just an individual transgression. It's a description of a condition, a state of being. And as Jesus said to the people in his day, you are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, so also is it today. In Ephesians chapter 1, verse 3, the unsaved are by their very nature children of wrath. And what's important to understand is that for the unsaved, their natures are so darkened by sin that what God and his people define as love, they define as oppression. In the family, the sacrificial, self-giving love that spouses are to experience is considered oppression. In motherhood, the sacrificial love of a mother is considered a violation of freedom, and hence oppression. And it's Satan himself that considers the love of God oppression, because Satan and his followers know nothing of love. God's redemption plan is to take some from the human race and turn them into loving creatures like himself. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. The unsaved prefer to live in a state of lovelessness, selfishness, hard-heartedness. They don't know what they don't know. And so we read in 2 Timothy chapter 3, in the last days, men will be lovers of themselves. They love, but they have the wrong object of love. You know, this is why all of the institutions that operate on love are now considered oppressive. Motherhood, the family, gender roles. because the self-centered see God's way of love as oppression. And in this, they think they're righteous because they believe that justice is for all moral behavior to be based upon what furthers their personal freedom, that they can do what they want to do. But that's not love. What is it that fallen mankind has against God? Well, God is opposed to their personal self-gratification and self-will. And God wants to break that will. Why? So that the sinner will be turned from being an unloving, self-centered monster into a loving child of God. But the rebel thinks he's just fine, and he loves his sinful bent and his self-will. Notice the deception and the self-righteousness that accompanies the evil heart. Pilate tried to wash his hands of the responsibility of shedding the innocent blood of Jesus. But the Jews clamored to have Jesus' blood on their hands and the hands of their children. Now, why would the Jews say such a thing? Because given their self-centeredness, their self-righteousness, their ideology, they were convinced that Jesus was wrong and they were completely innocent. That is the powerful deception of evil. So also with pro-choice, they're shouting out their abortions, gladly taking responsibility for the shedding of innocent blood. When one is bound to evil, one boasts that one is doing righteousness. So that's the bigger spiritual issue that's going on behind abortion, the hardness of men's hearts. So to illustrate, Michelle Williams, in accepting the Golden Globes for Best Actress, attributed her success to abortion, that she could not be successful without abortion because the baby would get in the way. That's the love is oppression ideology. When Alabama passed a law limiting abortions, CEOs from 180 companies opposing anti-abortion laws took out a full-page ad in the New York Times saying anti-abortion is bad for business. The deceptive lie? Don't ban equality. As if women are not equal with men unless we allow women to kill their babies. What moral blindness? The state of Georgia was considering limiting abortion, and Spike Lee called upon Hollywood to shut it down in Georgia. This is how much they love their abortion. Even Disney, that alleged family business, joined major Hollywood studios in boycotting Georgia. Now, be assured that this man-centered basis for law, resulting in theft, murder, immorality, doesn't last for long. It eventually collapses under the weight of its own evil. We're living in a very strange transitional time, the time between the abandonment of God and the collapse. The reign of Manasseh only lasted 55 years, communism only lasted 70 years, and Sodom eventually fell. And in all this, the world learns that the abandonment of God and the rule of man leads to destruction. But be assured that this current system is going to implode. And the reset that is coming may be the final reset, the prophesied great apocalypse and the coming of Christ. But while we're living in the middle of it all, we sometimes miss the big picture. Christians often fail to see the core problem is this secular state model, humanism and not God being the basis for law. This is the legal expression of the world's unbelief and rebellion. Also, what we're seeing over the last 50 years is silly, illogical arguments to justify murder and all sorts of sins. That somehow the argument of personal choice and personal convenience justifies murder. You know, it'd be much better if unbelievers were honest, and they would simply say, we don't believe in God, man is God, and if we want to say murder is right, if mankind would just simply say that we are God, and as God, we have a right to eliminate anyone we choose. But rather than admitting the truth, what we're seeing is that they're trying to cover up their murders with all sorts of defense mechanisms. George Orwell, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give the appearance of solidity to pure wind. And Isaiah chapter 29, for the ruthless will come to an end and the scorner will be finished. Indeed, all who are intent on doing evil will be cut off, who cause a person to be indicted by a word and ensnare him who adjudicates at the gate and defrauds the one in the right with meaningless arguments. So, speaking of meaningless arguments, last month in December, the Supreme Court heard arguments against a new Texas anti-abortion law. Back in May of 2021, Texas passed a fetal heartbeat law that bans abortion after detection of a heartbeat. Now, obviously, that's defending the life of the child on the wrong basis. I mean, even before a heartbeat, a person's a person, no matter how small. But the argument is that this incremental approach to banning abortion saves lives, and we should do everything we can to save as many lives as possible, even if we can't get the perfect law. Now, what was unique about this Texas law is its enforcement. The enforcement is not through the state, but through private citizens who can sue any abortion provider or anyone who helps a woman get an abortion for up to $10,000 per defendant. This effectively shut down abortion providers in Texas, and it avoided legal challenges by the providers. Planned Parenthood can't go to court and sue the Texas Attorney General like they usually would because he has no role in enforcing the statute. Now, despite what pro-choicers are saying, this means of enforcement is not unprecedented. The left has been using this method all the time when it comes to whistleblower cases, patent law, and discrimination cases, allowing individuals to sue those who break state law as the means of state enforcement. If your employer discriminates against you, the enforcement is that the state allows you as an employee to sue your business. So, pro-abortionists challenged the new Texas law in court, and in December, the Supreme Court ruled that the Texas law can stay enforced until it works its way through the lower courts. This doesn't uphold the Texas law, but simply states that the Texas law can stay enforced while it's being challenged. Now, at the same time, the Supreme Court heard the case Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, which challenges a new Mississippi law which bans almost all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The decision on this case should be announced in June of this year. This is the most important case since Roe versus Wade, because the conservative justices on the Supreme Court may overturn the right to abortion, since there's no right to abortion in the Constitution. And it would be almost impossible for the Supreme Court to let the Mississippi law stand without stating that the Constitution provides no right to an abortion. The transcripts for the oral arguments in this case are 125 pages long. It's too much to cover in detail. But the main point brought up by the conservative justices is this question: where is there a right to abortion in the Constitution? Justice Thomas asked, what right is really in question here? And the pro-choice lawyer representing the Jackson Abortion Clinic gave the typical answer. It's the liberty interest of the woman in the 14th Amendment. Justice Alito asked, when the 14th Amendment was ratified, what state constitution or law specifically recognized the right to abortion as part of liberty? And of course, none did. But the pro-abortionists need an argument for abortion, And what they're arguing is that the freedom of a woman from inconvenience by a child is above the right of the life of that child. That the right to freedom from inconvenience is a higher law than laws against murder. And inverting the higher law of God in this way would lead to all sorts of evil, but the left doesn't care. You know, they want the freedom to kill regardless of the legal reasoning. And this is why the left is talking more and more about Western logic being a human construct and being racist. Well, you know, I wish the Supreme Court justices would have exposed the real reasoning behind the arguments of the pro-choicers. But as I said, everyone neglects the heart of the issue. The six conservative justices weren't really concerned with the higher law of God or how the hierarchy of God's law is being perverted. In order to look judicial, they were just concerned with what the Constitution said. Now, fortunately, you know, they agree that the Constitution does not grant the right to kill a child for the sake of personal freedom. But still, even in all of their sophisticated legal arguments and education, they were arguing on the wrong foundation. Let me say again that when our Constitution was written, the Bill of Rights, enumerating individual rights, it was never intended to be the source for determining social morals. In 1780, everyone recognized that the Bible was the moral guide. But in that we have become a secular nation, the Constitution is now viewed as the source of morals. And that's why there are all of these legal fights, because the Bill of Rights is not a complete enough document to fulfill this requirement. Now, fortunately, the Constitution defends some human rights, so conservative justices may be able to overturn abortion on the basis of the Constitution. But unless the leaders of our nation turn back to God's revelation as truth, the Constitution will not prevent the slide into darkness. As John Adams wrote, "Avarice, ambition, revenge, and gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through the net." Well, the other big argument that came up in the Dobbs versus Jackson case is stare decisis, precedent. The first argument from the left is that a woman should have the right to terminate her pregnancy because the freedom of the mother comes before the life of the child. The second argument was that Roe versus Wade set up a court precedent that needed to be upheld, which is really an outrageous argument, because these same liberal judges didn't care about precedent when it came to overturning traditional marriage and legalizing same-sex marriage. The precedent argument is used by the left whenever it serves the outcome they prefer. Sotomayor tried to say that we can't overturn Roe because we'll be bending to every political wind, which is exactly what the courts did in ruling for abortion in 1973. The conservative Justice Kavanaugh read a list of previous rulings by the Supreme Court that were wrong when they were decided, such as the Dred Scott case that ruled a black man is not a person, and the Plessy versus Ferguson case where the Supreme Court ruled that segregation laws were constitutional. It took 50 years to overturn that case. Therefore, the argument that Roe versus Wade can't be overturned because it's precedent is a fallacious argument. A final argument brought up by the pro-choice side was viability. If a child cannot survive on its own outside the womb, it's not viable and therefore not a life and therefore can be aborted. But viability is an arbitrary standard that changes with advances in science. The only real standard is conception. Well, the point I'm trying to make here in reviewing this case is that what we're seeing is unbelievers in a desperate attempt to justify their loveless, self-centered autonomy from God. It's Psalm chapter 2. The kings of the earth take their stand. The rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us. We can get all lost in the legal weeds and the political arguments, but it comes down to, is man God or is God God? That's the battle. And that battle is coming to a climax in our day. And it's a grief to watch it all unfold. It's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. The final words of Habakkuk are very relevant for our day, because he saw the apostasy in his nation, ancient Israel, and he knew that the only solution and the outcome would be judgment. And so he concludes his book by writing, chapter 3, verse 16, I heard and my inward parts trembled. At the sound, my lips quivered. Decay entered my bones, and in my place I trembled, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vine, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stall, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, and he makes me walk on my high places. So even though the world is passing away, God's people can live above it all because our citizenship is in heaven. We walk on a high place in the heavenlies where we're seated, as it says in Ephesians. But we must wait on the coming day of the Lord. And while we wait, we must expose the nonsense arguments coming from the dark side. We must explain the real intent and the false foundation for their ethics. And we must explain the alternative worldview, the gospel of Jesus Christ. May God give us the grace to fulfill that mission. In closing, this week I was sending out yearly giving receipts. I want to thank you all for your financial support. I don't ask for money, but there are some who, out of love for, you know, the teaching of the word, send donations through checks and through PayPal. I don't take a salary from this, but this helps pay for radio time, for web hosting, for equipment. Because of donations, I was able to buy a new laptop, a nice new HP that I ordered during Black Friday sales. The one I've been working with for quite a time has been this old Windows 7 system. The keys are all starting to get worn off. It's been a real workhorse for me. My son's bought it for me one Christmas. You know, I do all my real work on this computer. I also have this powerful laptop here that I need for doing video editing. And I also have three used Windows 7 systems that I use to work as monitors for the three cameras. Now, but the big job I have is cleaning up this old computer and transferring all over to the new computer. And I was going to do it piecemeal, but I actually bought this program called PC Mover. And that's a project that I'm going to work on when I get some time. Well, the bottom line is, thanks for helping me out. I do this for Lord Jesus Christ, but the encouragement of other Christians helps to keep me motivated. I don't know how the prophet Jeremiah did it all alone. Next week, unless World War III breaks out, I'm planning to do a very interesting Bible study. I think I'll entitle it, What's the Matter with These People? So subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.